Welcome to another edition of Global Conversations. My guest tonight, longtime friend, he's an incredible analyst, a wonderful author of many books. His opinion is to be trusted. He's being heard and respected literally around the world. Dean Henderson from South Dakota, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Regis, thanks so much for having me back.
You know, it's always great to talk with you. We go back a ways. You've influenced me in more ways than I can ever imagine. I've read all of your books, and we've had many discussions about in depth about going down the rabbit hole, and it is a rabbit hole. But tonight, I want to focus on just a few things. Dean, the whole world is talking about Ukraine. People are virtue signaling, waving the blue and gold flags. They have no freaking idea what they really are supporting, but it's really troubling. The mass psychosis, hypnosis, I don't know what you want to call it, is unprecedented. But from where you sit and with your knowledge and background, how do you see this conflict in Ukraine today?
Yeah, well, it's a movie, you know, it's a made for Hollywood movie, and that's what they're doing. They've been doing this now for a while with, I think really it began in Kosovo with the war against Yugoslavia, which dismantled a country that was put together by Marshal Tito to unite different ethnic groups, you know, Serbs, Croats, Bosnian Muslims, everybody under the banner of socialism. And Milosevic was the torchbearer of that in the modern day. And everything about that war was a lie. And they still lie about it. And that was really the beginning of when I feel like the military industrial complex backed by the Crown, the City of London, Wall Street gang of bankers and royals and bloodlines really started to realize, okay, if we make movies, make wars into movies, that's how it's going to go. So, of course, when we're in Fallujah in Iraq, you know, massacring people and throwing them in I know a person who was there who actually ran a D9 bulldozer, and they just bulldozed hundreds, probably thousands of bodies, he said, into mass graves in Fallujah. And there was no journalists there. There was no reporters. They weren't even allowed to go into those areas. And if they were, they were assigned as, you know, whatever, with the military or whatever. So they couldn't really tell the real story. So you don't, that's a movie you don't make, Regis. You know, you just don't make that movie. And then, so you come over here to Ukraine, and this is where you want to make a movie. Why? Because obviously they want to bring Russia down. And, they've openly admitted, Lloyd Austin, our defense secretary, said it the other day, that the idea is to diminish Russia's power. And that's, and they're really the only reason they say that is because they have now been, Putin was the proactive actor here. I mean, he initiated this invasion, obviously, of Ukraine. But he is also responding to a war that began in 2014 on the Maidan, 2013, maybe the end of it, and on the Maidan, which was funded by George Soros, where you had shooters, shooting protesters, and they still to this day don't know who they were. Of course, we were told it was Yanukovych's people, who was the pro-Russian president and the leader of Ukraine at the time, but most of his administration, including him, say it was shooters from Georgia, probably some mercenaries, my guess, hired by the Mossad, working with Mossad, who is subcontracting that role from British intelligence, MI6, because that's just how it works. And they probably use some of these guys from South Ossetia that they ran against the Russians when the Russians routed them there in Georgia. with Shakashvili and put Shakashvili in charge with the Rose Revolution. So, and then he was later, of course, thrown out, indicted. He's now in jail. And then at latest, I heard actually he's moved to Ukraine. So Shakashvili has moved to Ukraine, and I think he's become a governor or something in one of the provinces of Ukraine. So we'll hide all the tyrants there. But anyway, look, man, so they initiated this whole thing against Yanukovych. They run him out in a coup by creating this scene on the Maidan with George Soros's money from his Open Society Foundation. And Soros is really he's the director of the movie, I guess, at this point, because he's the one who's, he's the number one lieutenant for the Rothschild family in the world. We can't forget that about George Soros. You know, people talk about George Soros, they should always talk about the Rothschilds. So he's funded the Rose Revolution in Georgia. He funded the Orange Revolution on the Maidan, which came to this Lilian Tymoshenko, who was a oil or natural gas baroness or whatever, billionaire. Then we finally get to an election and Petro Poroshenko is elected a chocolate billionaire, another oligarch. Because all the oligarchs, as we know, Regis, actually are mostly living in Ukraine, and they're the ones that fled Russian prosecution for their crimes of money laundering and pilfering the country back in 1997. Again, George Soros attacking the Russian ruble, and a year later, George Soros is attacking the Thai baht and the Indonesian rupiah and the Filipino peso, and so this guy just goes around. He funded the Egyptian revolution. He funded the Tunisian revolution. He funded the Cedar revolution in Lebanon, which is, if you see Lebanon nowadays, it's in shambles. The currency's crashing. They have no electricity. There's some countries in the world now that are at the brink, and that's one of them. Another one, Sri Lanka, can't pay its IMF debts and dire straits. And so this is playing out according to script, where the IMF, on behalf of the crown again, has, and by the way, they were in Ukraine involved with this situation too. And it was Yanukovych who, one of the reasons he was marched out was because he wouldn't go along with the IMF conditions for a loan that was offered to him, where he would have had to privatize a lot of the industry in Ukraine. He would have had to eliminate subsidies for food for people, electricity subsidies, and he would have had to basically, you know, what they usually do in these debt equity swaps, which is probably trade the National Railroad of Ukraine to Burlington Northern, probably Warren Buffett's mafia in exchange for debt relief. But anyway, he refused to go along with that. And that was when they, as John Perkins would say, sent in the jackals. And that was the Maidan. But it's like a movie. Soros is running the camera. Rothschilds are funding it. This is why, you know, the British are deeply involved, because, you know, the Europe doesn't have the luxury of what the United States and Canada and even Australia to some degree have, which is their own base for cropland. So they're heavily dependent on Ukrainian grains and things like this. And of course, as we see oil and natural gas, Bulgaria and Poland now being shut out of the natural gas market from Russia because they refuse to pay it in rubles, which is what Putin has decided to do. So long way of saying that, you know, I think these bankers were caught off foot. He was the initiator, Putin, this time. And so now they have to put a brave face on it and say, oh, we want to bring down Russia. Well, they've been wanting to bring down Russia since the 1950s. So, you know, what else is new? And that's why they encircled Russia with, you know, these little juntas in Estonia and Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, Bulgaria, Romania, Georgia, Ukraine, you know, Azerbaijan, and put all their bioweapons labs there, put all their S-300 missile systems there, point them right at, you know, Russia's head. And what do you expect to happen? So they've been poking the bear. Putin's been extremely patient. He was extremely patient in Syria when he had to go there and clean up our mess, because we funded ISIS, the terrorists, against Assad, the socialists, which is kind of what we do. We fund terrorists against socialists. That's if you want to know a U.S. foreign policy in a nutshell, in the early 21st century, that's it. We fund fascists to fight socialists. And a lot of times it's Islamic fascists lately. And now in Ukraine, you have actually white neo-Nazi skinhead fascists from all over the world coming there. And why wouldn't they, when you have a country whose culture has been corrupted so badly with this anti-Russian sentiment, to the point where you're telling people in the last few years, you know, you have to change your name. You can't speak Russian language anymore. There was a law passed involving that. So finally, Zelensky comes along and he says, what am I going to do if you elect me over Poroshenko? And he says, well, I'm going to make peace in the Donbass since, you know, you've ignored the Minsk I and Minsk II agreements already, which called for autonomy for Russian-speaking section of the Donbass in Donetsk and Lugansk. So he says, I'm going to make peace. I'm going to give them that territory and figure this out, which was a lie. He had no intention of doing that, but that's what got him elected. So what's that tell you about Ukrainian people? It tells me most people just want peace. They don't, they're not caught up in the, you know, I hate Russia game like the leadership is, because the leadership, again, is City of London-based oligarchs who could give a rat's ass about Ukraine or its people. All they want to do is shill its resources out to the IMF crowd, to the banker crowd, and then get bribed and get paid for it. That's what oligarchs do. They loot their countries on behalf of the international banking establishment, and then they get rewarded somehow for it, usually offshore accounts. So Zelensky, sponsored by this Kolomoisky, you know, Ihor Kolomoisky, he's the oligarch you'll never hear of, because he funded not only Zelensky's political career, but he also funded his acting career, which got him into politics, got him noticed, with this program called My Public Servant, where Zelensky is the actor, and he's a comedian of sorts, but he's also foreshadowing what's going to come. And he's also highly nationalistic, sort of this idea of Ukrainian identity, which is what we've seen for 40 years in Israel with this kind of Jewish identity against the Arabs, against, well, everybody. And that's kind of where Ukraine sits. They're just against everybody. They're Ukrainians, and they're so proud to be Ukrainians. And they just want weapons. I mean, every time I see these people on TV, they're just, you know, it's Zelensky, you know, snorting his coke, and then he wants weapons. And they want weapons and ammunition. And so Biden, $33 billion in weapons and ammunition yesterday. $33 billion. Oh, $33 billion. That's an interesting number. Yeah, because 33 degree Freemason becomes illuminated. 33 vertebrae in your back. We're the head. Crown sits on our head. Doesn't even tell us what to do. Just we do it. We do it for the crown on our head. Because we're the Illuminati. So $33 billion, and that's happening. If it gets through it has to get through the Congress. It might just be executive authorization. They didn't even do that anymore. You don't even have to vote on these things. So yeah, we're going to send another now $33 billion. It'll all get there late, because by that time, this line that goes from Kharkiv down to Mariupol, this Ukrainian military line, will be decimated. And the Russians will be knocking on the door of Dnipro. But it'll get there late, but it won't matter. It doesn't matter, because Lockheed Martin makes money on Javelin missiles. That's what matters. And we have to fill the gap now that the COVID scam and its online shopping paradise sort of being exposed for what it is. Amazon yesterday down 15%. People are not staying home anymore. They're not on their computer shopping anymore. So we have to back off the Great Reset, I would say, and go back to the old industrial war economy. But not the direct conflict. No more U.S. troops in Afghanistan or Iraq, or that's finished. We're going to go back to what the Democrats do, which is they like to use, they love to fight proxy wars. And then they can wave the flag and march the guy out and make him a national hero, kind of like Jesus Christ. You know, Zelensky's the new Jesus Christ, right? And they can sell this guy, and they can, even if he's a cokehead, even if he's, you know, a little mobster with houses in Florida and houses in Zurich, doesn't matter. We'll just make the TV show, make the program, make the movie, just keep the movie going. And that's what's going on. And this is like a little junta, a little fascist, neo-fascist junta that's settled in, sponsored by Kolomoisky and the rest of the oligarchs. Kolomoisky was one of the people who first just went into Ukraine and just robbed resources, just went in and took Russian state-owned natural gas fields and just started making money off them. So it's a little mafia, and that's who the U.S. is supporting. That's who Europe is supporting. But most of the world is not supporting that little mafia. When you can't even get Mexico to vote against the Russian invasion, you have problems if you're the West. Nor could they get Nigeria or South Africa or Indonesia or India or China or Saudi Arabia or Israel or the United Arab Emirates or Qatar or anybody really, or Turkey or anybody with any, outside of the white West, the white ruling class West, the European West. There is no support for this guy. There's no support for this Ukrainian war. But what there is a growing, I think, realization that the international economy is what's going to fundamentally change here. And Putin set, I think, sort of a trap, and he knew Biden would just step into it, and it's called sanctions. It's because he knew he'd get sanctioned, but he also was ready for it. And he knew, and he says, okay, we're going gold back ruble then. And people have been kind of waiting for that. And if he'd have done that outside of this conflict, I think it probably by the West would have been considered an act of war anyway. So he's like, okay, we'll do this. And this is why Bulgaria and Poland are going to be cold next winter. Very cold. But that's what's really going on. I mean, the geopolitics change are shifting. India, these countries are lining up more with this ruble block. India's already signed deals with China to buy goods in yuan and in the Chinese currency. So you're going to see the G20 sort of rising, I guess. The global south rising is what you see happening. Saudi Arabia's called off the dogs in Yemen, which is huge, just kind of quietly last week, just said we're done. That's huge. So to me, it looks like we've reached kind of the pinnacle regis of neoliberal capitalism. And from here on out, we're going to see an international trade and trade agreements and free trade and all this stuff that, you know, basically was a return to British mercantilism, I would argue. And we're going to go the other way now. And so the dollar is going to stay strong. People say the dollar is going down. It's going to stay strong because it's the only place to go for the oligarchs and the scumbags. The stock market's going to crash. They're trying to now, I think, navigate this situation where they can have high inflation and a depression at the same time. Kind of like, here's all this stuff, but you can't afford it, which is another way of saying the oligarchy has the Western population by the you know what, and they can charge anything they want for anything, and they will. And they are. And so you've got the situation in the West where you've reached this pinnacle of corruption, this pinnacle of bloodline control, this pinnacle of, Serco, Crown, SAS control, the United States of America through the Five Eyes Alliance and the rest of the world. And now you're going to see a response coming from Russia, from China, from India. And they're going to say, wait a minute, you control so much wealth and power. And then you took us through this COVID scam, and you probably created this bioweapon in Wuhan at your laboratory, which was DARPA, which was Fauci's crowd at NIH, and which was the Wellcome Trust under Jeremy Farrar, which is the Crown's charity, which is the biggest biomedical charity in the world, the Wellcome Trust. And so you've got this Anglo-American alliance, but it really doesn't include either British or American people. It's just this Anglo-American establishment elite bunch, all Freemasons, all sworn to the oath of secrecy, all working for the interests not of the United States or of Britain, but of this bloodline oligarchy that controls the planet from its base in the city of London. And what you're seeing with Russia, I think, more than anything else, it's kind of this response to this epic concentration of wealth It's like, oh, you want this last little bit of grain that grows in our region, and you want to take that and everything else that goes with it. And then you want to treat us like second class citizens, third class citizens. We've had it. So I think the Russian response is a good thing. It's the best you can do. And I think they're trying to minimize casualties. I think they're trying to open evacuation corridors. Everything we see in the West says just the opposite. But if you really look below the surface at what's really going on, you know, it's the Russians coming in. They're giving people food, water, shelter, medical care. Have not seen one single story of the Ukrainian government doing that. And why wouldn't you just do that for PR if you were doing that at all? But they're not. Instead, they're holding hostages at this iron works in Mariupol. You know, human shields that they won't let out. I mean, so I think the world even is starting to see, even despite the magic show and the TV and the movie production, then, you know, the programming, what this is, the recreation of the hive mind, the cementing of the narrative, despite all that, there's just big cracks in it. And I think most people, even in America, I think, you know, they said 6% of the people blame the Russian-Ukraine conflict for inflation, whereas 30% blame Biden, 30% blame corporate greed. So I think even in America, where you may think that all the Americans are, you know, thinking the same as CNN, No, I don't think people give a rat's ass about Ukraine in this country, really, most of them. And they know it's just another diversion, and they know it's just another way to make money, and they know it's a way for Biden to look tough and try to salvage the midterms and all this stuff. This game is so old. And you know, I think in the end, you're going to see the U.S. economy suffer and the European economy suffer because of the sanctions that they put on Russia, because we can't get things like nickel anymore for our electric cars. So you're going to see that the stock market was down over 900 points twice this week, two different days. So you're already seeing it. And that's kind of my take on it, I guess.
All right. I've got to ask you a couple of follow-up questions. Russia and the Great Reset. I, for one, and others have wondered whether Vladimir Putin is one of Klaus Schwab's lieutenants. He's been speaking at the World Economic Forum. He's been friends with Klaus Schwab for a long time. I've had friends here tell me, no, he's a KGB spy. He's been going there just to figure out what's going on and waiting to see what's going to happen. Now, because of this conflict in Ukraine, because of everything you've just outlined with the crown, with the city of London, George Soros running this for the Rothschilds, do you think Russia now is resisting, along with China, the Great Reset?
Yeah, I do. I think your local eyes and ears have it right. And I think he had to cozy up to Israel too. You saw him making a lot of visits with Netanyahu in the last 10 years. And some of us, me included, were kind of like, wait a minute, this is kind of worrying, you know? And then, yeah, he went to the World Economic Forum School for Leadership, you know, where Trudeau and Macron, a lot of these, Jacinda Ardern came out of, New Zealand's wacky little president or prime minister, whatever she is. But yeah, I think it was for intel the main thing you need to know right now is that Klaus Schwab is bad mouthing Putin. He's bad mouthing Russia. And like I said, it just looks to me like this whole fourth industrial revolution, which is also, by the way, the Fourth Reich, which involved Ukraine to a large extent. There's a lot of digital AI experimentation going on within the Ukrainian economy. It's not just Ukraine. It's all of these, not all of them, but some of these Eastern European kind of fascist countries that we've set up as a bulwark against Russia. Estonia is probably in the lead. In Estonia, it's all digital now. Everything's digital. I don't think they use cash. You pay for things with your face or your phone or, you know, so they've gone really over the top. But Ukraine was on that road too, is on that road, I should say, and was part of that sort of, I think it was like, you know, they were like the pupil in the front seat at Klaus Schwab's little class, Ukraine was. And now that's gone. And I think, yeah, I think Putin represents a return to hard assets, a return to a real world, not a 6G world where you can just make things up and say stuff and say it's true. A world where hard work will be rewarded again one day, where financial parasites will end up where they should end up, which is in prison. And this does not make Mr. Schwab happy, nor does it make anyone in his little club happy, which is why you see this just nonstop, you know, propaganda against Putin, you know, as if he's some, all kinds of things. You know, he's a psychopath. He's got, what was the other one the other day? He's got Parkinson's. Was he a rational player? When in fact, of course, you know, the irony is he's the only rational player that I can see here. China, I think's a little bit, we don't know yet. China, always an opportunistic nation. At least since Deng Xiaoping signed the detente with Kissinger in 73. It's the question of, did China go the way of Deng Xiaoping, or does China go the way of revolutionary Mao, minus maybe the cultural part that his wife brought in with the purges, which were bad things, which I maintain that she was maybe a Western intelligence asset, Mao Zedong's wife, because the Cultural Revolution was bad. And this is kind of what the West is doing right now. It's fighting this cultural Marxist war against the family, against, you know, value system, morals, while at the same time aiding and abetting the financial oligarchy. So not fighting an economic revolution, you know. And that's where Marx, to me, had it wrong too. Let's just, while we're at it, you know, he should have stuck to economics. And, but of course he didn't, because he was funded by Friedrich Engels, who was a wealthy German industrialist. So then they used communism with Marx tied to it, to, I think, discredit that word, discredit a lot of human history, because you have to realize that for tens of thousands of years, people lived as communists in tribes. And the indigenous people were the pure communist man. I mean, come on, man, that, you know, the hunter ate last, and then they shared everything. And it wasn't about the individual at all. It was about, you know, your role in helping the tribe survive. And there was a lot of joy in that. It wasn't, you know, onerous. It was, wow, I'm part of something. And that's, you know, what we're, so they used the state capitalist Soviet Union, the Trotskyists, who was funded by Kuhn Loeb, to discredit communism. And now they've done that thoroughly, it seems like. I mean, at least in the West, in the Western mind. Not so much in the Eastern mind, and not so much in the African mind by any chance. And also, I might add, the younger generation in America, you are seeing now some just people who just call themselves communists, just straight up. So some of that's even coming back. And but, you know, Putin is more pragmatic. And I think what we're talking about here is a move, sort of a third way, sort of a mixed economy third way, that now is trying to survive and try to make it in the face of this this free-for-all laissez-faire capitalism, which the West has unleashed globally. And through that process, the stock markets have gone up, the billionaires have gotten richer, most people have gotten left behind. And I think Putin, it's not so much, you know, these days that he represents some hardcore communism, it's just that he represents a mixed economy, which, yeah, I mean, to the CIA, that's too radical, and you'll get your head cut off, and they'll put on a post in a public square in Nicaragua or something to scare the Sandinistas. So that's how far right these people are, and that's why it is the Fourth Reich, too, because it's not a coincidence that we're supporting neo-Nazis in Ukraine. It's not a coincidence that, I mean, that's who we always support. Think about it. We backed MSB in Saudi Arabia after he cut some dude's head off that worked at the New York Times and the embassy in Turkey, and we didn't care. He's still in power. Biden's over there begging him for oil. All of our friends are fascists, don't you know? There was all of our friends are fascists. They always have been. That's what's funny about the United States. You know, sometimes you'll have a liberal, they say, a president or conservative, whatever. It's all the same. Overseas, it's all the same. Your corporations, your CIA, your deep state, your crown, people support the fascists, the most right-wing possible. You know, just push wages down and help the rich. And that's the story of human history over the last, 8,000 years. And maybe, just maybe, we're at a turning point where, you know, these people will be forced to do some things. But it's not going to happen in the West. I mean, we've got all this inflation. We've got, you know, people can't even pay the rent. I heard this morning rents were up like 54% in Miami over the last 2 years. So all you got to do, if you have a mixed economy sort of outlook, is put rent control in and tell these landlords, look, you can't do this. It's the same with the oil patch. Record profits for Chevron, record profits for Exxon. We just found out yesterday, record profits tripled for Chevron, I think, in the last quarter. And yet, we'll just open up the strategic oil reserve and rob oil from the American people and let Chevron keep gouging you. You know, and then not to mention the futures exchanges in London and New York that trade oil, where Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley predominate and make $50 a barrel just sending it from Rotterdam to New York. You know, just on the way it comes, it sells for 80, it sells here for 130. What's going on here? I mean, so if you were of the mixed economy or socialist or definitely communist mindset at all, and not just a total right-wing fascist, which is what Biden is, Biden's a right-wing fascist. I mean, you know, you could sit there at Fox News and call him a leftist or a progressive or a Democrat. Go ahead, call him that if you want, if it scores political points for Rupert Murdoch and your minions, but it's false. Biden is a right-wing Democrat, always right of center, and increasingly part of just this little fascist cabal. And they love proxy wars. So what you have is setting up in Ukraine is a proxy war. $33 billion, you go fight the war. Our boys aren't going in. And it just reminds me of Bill Clinton or Jimmy Carter or any number of, you know, supposedly liberal El Salvadoran dictators that we used to know.
All right. So Dean, who the hell is behind all of this? You know, you've talked about the Rothschilds, you've talked about Soros, you've talked about the crown. Whose agenda is this?
Well, it's the bloodline agenda. The bloodline families who I believe, from my research, descend from the Nephilim or the fallen angels of the Bible or the Anunnaki of Sumeria. They're not, in other words, 100% human. But throw that aside if you don't believe that. I don't care. You can believe it or not believe it. That's irrelevant to this discussion. But anyway, these bloodlines, wherever they came from, they exist. And they've been in charge for about 8,000 years. King Sargon was the first king. Where was he king? He was king in Samaria. So the idea of kingship came up in Samaria, where these Anunnaki were supposed to have landed. At any rate, and this idea of bloodlines, that's where it comes from. The idea that you can become a king or a queen or a prince or a duke or a lord or a baron or a baroness or a duchess or, all these titles based on bloodlines, based on who your daddy was or who your mommy was. It's wrong. It's not who we are as human beings. It's an intercession by cosmic galactic hierarchy that doesn't naturally exist on Earth. And it's wrong. So we're a meritocracy. We're, you know, we like to reward people, humans do, who are good at things. Or we did. And now what you see is this decline, because what you have now is you have bloodline families running the media. Bloodline families are the anchors of the media. You know, look at Anderson Cooper. He's a Vanderbilt. Look at this Brzezinski gal on MSNBC. Her dad is Zbigniew Brzezinski, right? And she tries to play this little liberal. It's funny. They run the media. They have the anchors. They have the newspaper people. They have the intelligence people. The bloodlines now control our government and our industry and our media and our politics at every level. This is why you're seeing, this is why you sit there and watch Western media and go, wow, I can't believe how dumb these people are. Because in fact, they are really dumb. And they're not the best. They're not the brightest. They're not the, it's not a meritocracy. You only get these jobs because of who your bloodline is. And this will, this will result in the demise of Western civilization in and of itself. This sort of bloodline control where they run everything now too. They want to run everything because they're just total control freaks. They want to own it all and then run it all and then control you inside your body now with vaccines and electromagnetic frequencies. And behind it all are these bloodlines, and they're not very smart. So at every level, you're seeing sort of a dumbing down of the media, of the government, of the even the industry leaders. And you will, and this will result in our demise probably quicker than anything Putin can do. But that's who runs it. And these people, you know, there was a big breeding program all through Europe, and then it sort of reached a crescendo in Normandy in the 10th century and out of the Norman area of Northern France and Southern or Northern Spain and Southern France. A lot of these families then dispersed throughout Europe and carved it up. Plantagenet family, the Rolla family, which is the Viking bloodline. The Hanover family, which is where these creeps come from in England. The Habsburg family, probably still the most powerful of the families. The people who supposedly have given Klaus Schwab the spear of destiny, which killed Jesus Christ, and they've now given that to him. The Bourbon family, another very powerful bloodline, the King of France or the King of Spain, I mean, sorry. So the Merovingian bloodline, which claims descendancy from Jesus himself, which is a lie. But and then you have the Khan bloodline in India and Pakistan and that region, which has now gone global, and they work really close with these people. You see a lot of Khans lately running things, K-H-A-N. Watch for that name. You'll see it everywhere, whether it's Prime Minister of Pakistan or whether it's some medical doctor in the United States telling you that you should take your COVID shot. There's a lot of Khans popping up. There's a lot of Shahs popping up because the Shah is another bloodline family, S-H-A-H. As in the Shah of Iran, that now you're going to see Shah, a lot of Shah names. Aziz Shah is the medical czar for Biden now. You can see Yamamoto bloodline. You can see the Li bloodline in China. But these are the bloodlines I'm talking about that actually run the world and actually covet the resources of Ukraine. It's pretty simple. You know, they wouldn't do this to any. I mean, if Russia invaded, you know, what did they do when Russia invaded South Ossetia? Didn't invade it, but they defended it against this creep that took power. Nothing. You know, so this is, you know, they wouldn't do this in Estonia. Well, they might now. Estonia's in NATO. They'd have to do it. But Ukraine's a very strategic country and a very resource-rich country. And I think, obviously, what the Russians now are, which I predicted they would do a month ago, is they're going to take all the way to Odessa and right up to the Moldova border. And in Moldova, there's apparently a pro-Russian faction in Transnistria that they're going to try to link up. And then, so they're going to have the whole Black Sea, the whole Sea of Azov sealed off from Ukraine. It'll be a landlocked country. And that's going to just, that's going to make things very difficult for these fascists to operate. Because most of their contraband, and they run a lot of contraband through Ukraine, comes in through the seaports. So they're gonna seal that off. Then plus Russia will have that whole area for trade and for commerce. And then they're gonna, I think, take Donetsk and Lugansk back, maybe up to Dnipro. And I don't know about Kiev, but I think it depends how Zelensky behaves. I think it depends what the West does. I mean, if they keep being belligerent and sending arms in there, you know, they might just take the whole thing and just say, you know what, fuck you, go back to fucking Poland. You know, just get out of here, all the way out of here. We don't want anything to do with you, because, you know, Western Ukraine is kind of the den of the fascists. And they're not nice people. And but that's who runs it. We just, to me anyway, it's the crowns of the world, the kings, the queens, the titled people, through their abuse of this bloodline privilege, this sangreal, this royal blood. You know, all these dumb concepts that people actually, I guess some people actually believe in, which is unreal, because it has no place in our world, in our human world. It never did. It, like I said, it was an intercession from another place. And we as human beings, our obligation is to defend this turf, defend this earth from this nefarious force and from these toxic ideas. More importantly, that this force proliferates and makes sort of normal, because none of this is normal. There's a lot of stuff that passes for normal in this world that, you know, is criminal, really. And it's abuse of humanity, it's abuse of nature, it's abuse of natural law. And like I say, my hope is that Putin is taking the first shot in this war against this bloodline oligarchy and its evil concepts and its evil ideology and ontology, the ontology of fear, basically, that came into this world and that is not human. No.
So, Dean, we're going to end on this note. To me, as I look out at the world, at what's happening to culture, values, spirituality, conscience, whether it be in the United States, whether it be in Europe, it seems to be an attack on our humanity. What it is that makes us human is what they're strangling, what they're poisoning. How do we survive, Dean? What do we have to do as human beings? I know, first of all, you have to recognize this, but what can we do?
I think, yeah, main thing really, I would say is just to stay human. So you can't go along with it. You can't participate. Non-participation, John Trudell calls it. It's a great term, non-participation. So you try at every level not to participate in the system, at least in this Western system that we have to live under, because at every turn it involves compromise, lies, deception, fraud, because it's based on a Luciferian concept. It's not based on a God concept. It's not based on altruism. It's based on, you know, pure capitalism, you know, the power of capital over labor, the power of money over people, over nature. So all you can do really in the end is keep your integrity. And if it's something, you know, if something comes along and it's, you know, you're told to do it by the system and you know it's wrong, you just don't fucking do it. And that, look, yeah, you're going to be jobless. I mean, it's not easy. Okay. It's not easy. It gets harder every day. Let's face it. But on the other hand, what's the alternative? You know, go to the dark side, I guess, and aid and abet these lizards in their conquest, which we've already seen way too much of. There's a lot of people aiding and abetting these lizards that know better and keep doing it because they're addicted to stuff, or they're addicted to this idea of having a home, or they're addicted to a lifestyle, a certain standard of living, which is really a shame. But I think that's what you got to do, Regis. You stay human and you know what that means, because, you know, and that's going to take a little bit of, you know, research. And I'd suggest a lot of research out in nature and a lot of time in nature. And then you'll understand what it means to be human. You know, go camping for a week and build a fire every night, cook over that fire every night, go fishing, and, you know, find out what it takes to be human. And then with that will come a sense of like who you are, because that's the problem. They a long time ago stripped us of knowledge of who we are. And you can't fight the good fight even unless you know who you are and unless you know what you're fighting for. So, but it's a critical time to start getting into that if you haven't already. And because I do think, yeah, there's a major confrontation coming here between good and evil. And this could be sort of a harbinger of the beginning of that war. So you better get on the right side, is what I'd say. And, you know, pick it right. I guess the consequences of being on the wrong side at this point are going to be dire.
So, Dean, we started out talking about Ukraine, this conflict that has got the whole world, well, the Northern Hemisphere anyway, completely engaged in this. And we're finishing with really what's got nothing to do with Ukraine, but everything to do with robbing us of our humanity. It's an epic battle for preserving who we are as humans.
Okay, is a Lakota term. It means onward into the battle.